views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
You are listening to People Like Us Radio with Megan Lyons, transcending the trauma of the human experience. In this hit show, Megan will show you how to find true healing and inner peace through the art and practice of self-love. Megan works to uncover the deeper psychological proclivity that fuels toxic behavioral patterns, and she'll help you integrate creative processes and holistic healing so you can effectively process and transmute trauma. Now here's your host, Megan Lyons.
Hello, it's Megan Lyons, and today I have a very special guest, Donna Anderson, the author and creator of a infamous website that is one of the, in my opinion, best resources out there for sociopathy studies, education, healing, recovery. Donna, she's created this. Tell us a little bit about your website and where we can reach you if we want to get more information.
My website is called lovefraud.com. And it's on the internet, and all you have to do is type in lovefraud.com, and we have lots of information. And I'm very glad, Megan, that you invited me on your show and asked me to talk about it, because, you know, this is such a major problem. There's so many people out there who are struggling to try and figure out what happened to them and what these people are that they're involved with. So I thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this information.
Oh, you're welcome. It's definitely a great platform for me to use, and you know, I've reached so many people have been able to reach me through your directory listings, and I have met so many wonderful people and clients and even people to do business with from it. So it's great in that respect. And it's been, how long has it been? When did you originally publish the site?
Well, I can tell you how I got started in this. Essentially, I married into this information. I married a guy who took $250,000 from me. He cheated with at least 6 different women during our 2.5-year relationship. He had a child with one of those women. And then, 10 days after I left him, he married the mother of the child, which turned out to be the second time he committed bigamy. And
Oh, my Lord.
Yes,
I don't even think I knew all those details until just now.
Oh, my goodness. And, well, as you can imagine, I was pretty traumatized by what was going on, and I had a therapist that I was working with, and I would say to her, you know, he did this, he did that, he did this, he did that, and she finally said, he sounds like a sociopath. And I'm like, sociopath? What is that? And
right.
And I started researching it.
You think Ted Bundy.
I don't even know if I thought that, to be honest with you. I started researching it, and I think one of the first references that I went to at the time was Robert Hare's book, Without Conscience.
Right.
And he talks about psychopaths, and I'm reading this book and saying, oh, my God, I mean, this is everything that I'm experiencing and what this guy is doing to me. I mean,
sure.
I highlighted it with this, you know, orange marker, and the whole book is orange, you know, everything that I was writing
right.
down. Yeah.
Really.
So, yeah. And so, at the time, of course, this was a long time ago. This was, you know, I met this guy in 1996, and the whole relationship was over by 1999. And it was after
and how
that
did you
that
meet
I,
him?
Well, I met him online. And, of course, this was also back in the early days. I mean, it was actually on AOL.
AOL.
Yes, yes.
That's funny.
I mean, we're talking, yeah, it's, I mean, this is before there were, you know, dedicated dating sites. You know, people
right.
just, like, putting ads up. And it was before everybody knew that the online dating was full of predators. You know, it was back.
Right.
When, you know, people thought, you know, that it was just a cool thing to do. And you didn't know that everybody was lying. So, and at the time, of course, there was no Google either. So there wasn't an opportunity
right.
to try and check out, you know, what I was dealing
Google.
With. Right. It just simply was not an option. And but after my experience, I figured that if I didn't know about this type of person and I was, you know, a college graduate, I was running a business. And if I didn't know, there had to be many, many other people who also didn't know. And
right.
sure enough, what I did was I would start talking to people and telling them, you know, what my ex did and what I was going through. And they would say, gosh, I know somebody that happened to. Or, yeah, I know, that same thing happened to me. So there's all these people who are going through similar situations, and none of us had any idea that there was a reason for it. And the reason was that the people were disordered. They're antisocial, they're psychopathic, they're narcissistic, one of these things. But at the time,
right.
nobody was talking about this. And in fact, like Dr. Hare's book was relatively new. So what happened was I wanted to go ahead and get this information out. And so I actually published lovefraud.com in 2005. So it's been, what's that, 13 years that it's been on the internet. And I can say
very
that
widely used source.
Yes, yes. And I can say that you know, I've collected more than 10,000 cases, you know, of people who have contacted me. Yeah, to tell me their stories. People send me emails. They fill out our surveys. They tell their story on the blog. And so, you know, I mean, this stuff is rampant, and it's so important to get the information out. And so that's what we do with lovefraud.com.
And it's such a blessing to have that site because there's so many neat little things that you have. I mean, for example, is it a zip code or area code analysis in which, you know, you plug in the information and it'll sort of give you a statistic for the ratio of sociopaths in your, but it's got
right.
an area code or zip code.
It's an area, it's a zip code, yes. And
okay.
We call that the Love Fraud Risk Calculator. And what you do is you can just go to that page and plug in your zip code, and it'll do the math for you to figure out, like, how many sociopaths might be in your area. And
do you know what the number one area is off the top of your head, or is that the number one population?
Well, no, it's the same percentage, you know, anywhere. I mean, that's one of the
right.
things about sociopaths is that they're everywhere. They are
right. You can't really avoid them.
No, you can't. You know, they're in all communities. They're in all demographics. They're all races, all religions, men, women, old, young, rich, poor.
Right.
I mean, they're everywhere. So essentially what the calculator does is just you put in the zip code and it retrieves the population of that area and it does the math. You know, 1-4% of the people have antisocial personality disorder. And so, I mean, it's shocking, you know, when you plug your zip code in and say, oh, my gosh, you know, how many people just in my neighborhood or in my community are disordered
right.
by this? So, and it's important.
And that number is probably low, too, because is that assuming that there's, you know, some sort of diagnosis or how do we determine whether or not somebody is classified as such? Because, you know,
right.
they often evade formal diagnoses and evaluations because they can manipulate these tests and whatnot.
Yes. So I'm actually just looking to see how we calculated that because if I use I think I used just the number for, oh, here we go, Love Fraud Risk Calculators. Yes, okay. So this calculates 1-4% of the population, and that's the general figure for people who would be diagnosed or could be diagnosed as having either antisocial personality disorder or psychopathy, okay? So In reality, if you look at people who have all the exploitative personality disorders, which also includes narcissistic personality disorder and to a certain degree people with borderline personality disorder,
right.
If you calculate those figures, you know, the expert estimates of how many there are adds up to 12% of women and 16% of men. Okay?
That's pretty staggering.
Yes. And that means there's like 40 million people who are disordered in the United States.
Right.
And they're everywhere.
That is so obscene.
It really is. And beyond that, I mean, this is the number for those who could be considered diagnosable, you know, the point you just made.
Sure.
So, I mean, beyond that, there are people who have partial disorders who have some of the traits, but not all of them. And
right.
You don't want to be with these people either. You know, I mean, they can be extremely destructive. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, I could just guess at how many people have partial disorders. So perhaps it's, you know, the same amount who are fully diagnosable. So then maybe we're talking, you know, 24 to 32% of the population have some level of disorder. You know,
well,
and
it's interesting because, I mean, you know, to be classified as having a full-blown disorder, I remember speaking to my therapist about that and asking her, you know, what would actually give somebody, you know, that sort of label of being, you know, having the full-blown disorder. And she said, well, you'd have, you know, some of the traits and at least, you know, four or five or six of the traits, but then that coupled with the fact that you cannot maintain a normal life. And it's like, well, what does that mean? You can't hold down a job. You can't, you know, you can't stay out of jail. You can't maintain relationships because often, you know, a lot of the highly successful sociopaths that we see in the government and that we see leading our countries and major organizations, I mean, clearly they have some level of success relative to maintaining a life. I mean, certainly they have stable income. They have, you know, wielded a substantial amount of power. And so how would we define that? You know, so that's interesting as well. Can you speak to that at all?
Oh, absolutely. The issue is that these disorders are two things. They are continuums and they are syndromes. And so let me explain what that means. A syndrome means that there are a collection of traits that kind of hang together that describe what the disorder is. For example, someone who is psychopathic, some of the traits include grandiosity, deceitfulness, a lot of marital relationships. Yeah, there's a whole list of 20 of them when you're diagnosing someone with psychopathy. So, and a continuum means that an individual person can have each one of these different traits to a greater or lesser degree. And they score it as a 0, 1, or 2. 0 mean it's not present at all, 1 meaning it's somewhat present, and 2 meaning it's definitely present. So what happens is you have this whole matrix, and any particular person can have any of these traits to greater or lesser degrees. And so that's why you see people who are what they call the successful psychopath. You know, they're the ones who are heads
right.
of the corporations and have all these other positions of responsibility, but they're also, like, you know, tormenting their wives and ignoring their kids and all this other stuff.
Right.
So, and that's the reason. The reason is because they are not all the same. Anyone can have any of the traits to varying degrees, and for that reason, they can be hard to spot because it's actually the ones who are kind of in the middle to the low end that are harder to see because they seem more normal
right.
than the ones
more
who
covert.
Are obviously. Well, yeah, or they're not drug dealers. They're not arrested. You know, they're not committing murder or any of these things. And
right.
so there are millions
they have the
of people.
Facade of success.
Exactly, and they are successful. I mean, there are. In fact, Dr. Robert Hare says that, you know, if you can't find enough psychopaths in prison, you should look in the stock market, you know?
Right, absolutely.
That's where they are. So, in fact,
and, you know,
there was the financial crisis of 2008, there was a guy who did some research on that and essentially concluded that the whole meltdown was caused by psychopaths who were irresponsible with other people's money from the financial industry.
Right. There's a reckless disregard for the well-being of others, and really that is their whole MO as far as exploiting. You know, they're not only do they have a reckless disregard, but their intention and motivation is to defraud their victims. So, of course, they pretty much have to be sociopathic in nature because they don't have any sort of, you know, certainly not any empathy, but they don't have any regard at all for, you know, anybody else that they're hurting. That's their whole intention.
This is true. Or also sometimes it's that, I mean, they know that they are causing harm, but they just don't care. Or in the case of narcissists, sometimes they're just clueless. You know, they are more concerned about what it is that they want, and they just are oblivious to the fact that they're hurting other people as they pursue what they want. So, you know, there's a lot of variations to this, but it's important that people understand that the disorder is out there, and then what the warning signs are, because if you see these types of people, the only effective thing to do is to get them out of your life.
Right. And that's the hard part. And especially, you know, for me, when I'm dealing with these cases and people have children with them or they're married, it is very difficult for them to sever or then co-parent. I mean, the co-parenting is an absolute nightmare and it doesn't get any better. What I've been seeing is it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Oh, that's disheartening.
It really is.
Why do you say it's getting worse?
It's just the cases that I've seen, even in litigation where we may have achieved a positive ruling or the judge has acknowledged that we have a very unhealthy dynamic, and not necessarily labeling somebody or identifying them with the disorder, but just that there's an unhealthy dynamic going on. And so maybe they've ordered like a particular type of parenting arrangement or time-sharing arrangement with stipulations, or maybe they've mandated that there's a specific software used, such as Talking Parents and things like that, in which their dialogue must be recorded, and then it goes straight to the judge. Things like that that would be implemented in cases where we're dealing with high-conflict personalities. I hoped that, you know, these cases would start to get better and that the communication would improve over time, especially when it's kind of been made known that there's an issue and it's just not happening. The communication's getting worse. And, you know, the people are stooping to new levels with bullying tactics and name-calling and abuse and just manifesting itself in so many different layers and with so many different players. And also, what I'm also seeing is that both parents are really guilty of the same thing. They're just maybe manifesting their abuse in different ways. Maybe one person is a little bit more clever with, you know, their nefarious behavior, or, you know, they have a more sarcastic, caustic tone. But really, in all reality, that hostile, contemptuous energy is still being circulated in the case. It's still affecting the children, and nobody wins.
Yeah.
And so it's just, like you were saying earlier, you know, you could have some of the traits and it would be equally as damaging. That's true, because I almost look at it as like a flu virus that gets passed on from person to person. And it's just so contagious and it's so, you know, inflammatory. The symptoms are so inflammatory. And once it passes on, let's just say in a household, that energy, that fear energy, or that just toxicity, and it's at such a high level that it literally can impair the entire family and just takes people down. And before you know it, nobody even realizes what's going on. Everybody's just sort of, it's almost like a binding spell that everybody's just, you know, becomes taken over by it is what I'm seeing. And it's really frightening. And then it obviously in the courtroom, now we'll see it in the courtroom, and now the judges and the lawyers are all participating in this. So it's just, for me, it becomes daunting to try and, you know, even make heads or tails of it. Or, and some days I just feel disheartened about it because of the fact that it seems to be getting worse. And there's just not a lot of education on it. So thankfully, you know, your site is available, and hopefully we can get more and more courses and information out there so that people can become educated. One thing I've been doing is teaching my clients to really empower themselves and to tell their story and to not be afraid in court either, you know, to speak their truth and almost to rely less on legal professionals.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's terrific because, you know, I think you bring up an important point, and that is that if one of the parents, if we're talking about a divorce and custody situation, if one of the parents is totally disordered and the other parent, it is almost like it's contagious. And because the other parent, a couple of things happens, or the one who started out healthy, put it that way. First of all, they become reactive to the situation. And, you know, secondly, they actually start to mirror some of those behaviors that they see almost out of self-defense, you know, because
right.
they're kind
yeah,
of in survival
reactive.
Mode. Yes.
Correct.
Yes. And so, and that's one of the reasons why it's so important for the healthy parent and the children to employ as much no contact as possible. But of course, what happens is that the courts don't necessarily recognize that. I mean, one of the big problems is that even if someone, one of the parents is diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder or psychopathy, the judges don't know what that means. You know, they don't know that that means you're a terrible. Yeah, so they don't know that it means you're a terrible parent, and they just, you know,
you have an inability to parent.
Yes, yes, exactly. So yeah, it's pretty scary stuff, and so that's why it is so important for people to educate themselves about the fact that these disorders exist and to learn what the warning signs are. Because, you know, you get into these situations, you're like stuck. And, you know, if you have kids with these people, you're stuck with them forever. And,
right.
The best
Let's
solution.
Let's take a quick break and we'll pick right up on that point when we get back.
Okay.
Let's take a quick break. Thank you.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Maine. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmaine.com.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Demystifying the journey on From Here to There Radio with your host, Diane Garris. Tune in every third Wednesday, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com as Diane helps you get from where you are now to the life you envision. Get ready to get unstuck and move forward. Every show features a new special segment, New Age Notes, demystifying hot metaphysical topics of the day. For more information or to work with Diane, visit DianeGarris.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a moment for standing in your power. Self-control begins with noticing how different feelings present themselves in your body. When you're feeling sensitive, for example, your chin might quiver, tears might well up in your eyes, and your voice might catch in your throat. Anger, on the other hand, might appear as tension in your jaw, back, or arms, along with clenched fists, heat in the upper torso, scowling, and a strong desire to yell. The more aware you become of your body cues, the easier it will be to recognize when you're on the road to disaster. Choose the emotions that cause you problems, then start noticing and logging the body cues that come with them.
For information and to work with Debbie, visit empoweringnrg.com. That's empoweringnrg.com.
Back from break. I wanted to pick up on the last question that I asked you because it was really important. Donna, do you want to just kind of repeat what you had said before we got cut off?
Well, we were talking about the importance of understanding that these disordered people are out there, because essentially, if you don't know that they're out there, you can end up in a situation where you're married with children with someone, and then you're stuck with a person like this forever. So the only real way to protect yourself is to understand that these people exist and to know what the warning signs are. And then if you see someone who has these traits, is to get the person out of your life as quickly as possible.
Right. And one thing that we mentioned earlier is that there's no immunity, or it's not like there's, you know, a race or a religion or a socioeconomic group or a part of the world in which you'll be shielded from this dynamic. So what would you say, if you could, are some of the, I don't want to say main traits, but gut feelings or intuition, if you could impart on the listeners, you know, let's just talk, not the textbook traits, anybody can look those up, but in our own personal experience, and I can share some of mine as well, do you think that you can summarize or give any of the, you know, listeners some things that just in your gut, you know, you'll be triggered about an individual like this that you might come across or that somebody might be dating or interacting with, that you think are kind of hallmark?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, I wrote a book about that. It's called The Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. And my book does identify exactly what those traits are, at least in a dating or romantic relationship. And so I could talk to you a little bit about what they are.
Please.
Yes. The number one trait is usually charisma and charm. And what that means is that if you're involved romantically with a sociopath, they seem to have this appealing energy and magnetism about them. They seem to be very exciting. They're smooth talkers, and they never miss a beat. Another thing that happens is that what I call the sudden soulmate. When you meet someone who's a sociopath, you feel like you've met the person you've been waiting for all your life. And
right.
There's a reason for that. And the reason is because the sociopath studies you, figures out what it is that you are looking for, and then turns himself or herself into that person. And then what they do is they say, oh, my goodness, you know, we have so much in common. You know, we share all the same values. We like all the same things. We must be soulmates. So another thing
they
that
may
happens.
Even study, they may even study, you know, patterns of speech or, you know, get really intricate with it. That happened to me where an individual had known me for a long time and even started mimicking dialect and, you know, buzzwords and catchphrases. So it can be extremely intricate, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, another thing that happens, especially with people who meet someone online, is what a sociopath will do is they will study your profile. And that's
right.
One of the things that's important to recognize about online dating is that, you know, we talked about sociopaths are everywhere. Well, they're in online dating sites also for sure. And, you know,
absolutely.
What happens is that, you know, people talk about how to protect yourself in online dating situations. And one of the things they always say is, you know, meet in a public place or don't give your last name or don't give your phone number or any of these types of things. And that's all well and good. But the real issue with online dating is when you create a profile. Because if you put in your profile what you like and what you're looking for, you are giving a predator a roadmap to figure out what it is that you want and then
absolutely.
To make it. Yes, yes. And so
totally
that's actually, yeah, that's actually the biggest risk of online dating is when you do your profile, when you're telling people exactly what you're looking for. So all they have to do is follow your directions and, you know.
You make it pretty easy for them.
Exactly, exactly. And so even if you don't do it that way, another thing that they do is they will study your Facebook page. They will study how you interact in any forums or Twitter or any of these things. So, you know, people really should be careful about what they put in social media because they are revealing themselves and telling other people what your interests are and what you're looking for. I mean, even if you're not on the dating site, if you're doing it on Facebook, you are still providing a predator with the information that he or she needs in order to hook you. So, you know, people really should be careful about that.
And I might add that you would be never be too shocked at what they might be using against you or, you know, what they think they're using against you. But for me, it was really quite hysterical. I mean, not really hysterical, but just using that word instead of saying something sad or, you know, demoralizing. But I'm trying to look at it in lighter terms now. But I created a blog that I'm telling you, nobody looks at this thing, okay? Nobody goes on my blog. And I know that because I get the stats. And they tell me, you know, I got one viewer every month or something like that. It wasn't created really to be mass produced or anything like that. It was almost like my own diary or journal type thing. And it has a lot of like my spiritual beliefs and things like that. So I had my ex-boyfriend. He found that blog somehow and read the blog, and he actually commented on it. He's the only person that's commented on the blog. I'm one of a few people. And believe me, he used all of that against me and, you know, came at me as some, you know, wolf in sheep's clothing in the respect of this, you know, religious type. And, you know, I wasn't seeking that anyways, but it was just crazy how, you know, speaking to what exactly you're saying, that he took that blog, dissected it, and then tried to use it against me. I mean, he really just screwed himself, but.
And that's classic. What you have just described is classic disordered behavior. And, you know, people need to be aware of that. And a couple of the other traits that sociopaths engage in, one is sexual magnetism. And so that means if you feel this intense attraction and if your physical relationship with a dating partner is like off the roof, It could be their excess testosterone, because both male and female sociopaths have excess testosterone. And what that means is that, you know, they're very interested in sex and they're very interested in pursuing sex. And so that shows up in what you see about them. And then another trait that's really important is what we call love bombing. And what that means is that when you meet someone who's disordered, a sociopath or a psychopath, they will shower you with attention. They will tell you how wonderful you are. They will want to be with you all the time and be making dates like 6 months in advance and all of this type of behavior. And, you know, typically if you are on the receiving end of this, you think this person is madly in love with you, that you know, they've got to be head over heels in love with you, or else they wouldn't be doing this. So,
right. Putting all that time and attention.
Exactly. So now, actually, what I've described so far, the first four of the red flags, which are charisma and charm and sudden soulmates and sexual magnetism and love bombing, you know, that all sounds actually like it could be pretty good. I mean, who wouldn't want to be involved with someone who's sexy and charming and thinks you're wonderful and wants to be with you all the time?
So titillating.
Yeah. So so it's important to understand that there are other traits. And the next one is blames others for everything. I mean, this is a typical antisocial or narcissist. Nothing is ever their fault. Anything that happens, there's an excuse.
Zero accountability.
Exactly. Somebody else had it, did them in or didn't do what they were supposed to do or whatever, or, you know, the dog ate my homework or who knows.
Right.
You know, but so the thing is that, you know, I would encourage your listeners to check out Love Fraud, and we do have a page that talks about the 10 red flags of love fraud, or they could get my book. And because it's very important to understand that you want to see this, you need to know what the warning signs are, and then if you start to see this entire picture, to realize that you could be dealing with a problem, because...
And that's putting it lightly.
Yeah. And the thing is that...
A colossal,
you know,
nightmare that never ends.
That's exactly right. And the thing is that, you know, once you get involved with these people, they're very hard to get rid of. And so it's very important to know the warning signs and to realize that, you know, not everybody who is, like, charming and sexy, that doesn't automatically make you a sociopath. But if you start to see this whole list of 10 different warning
cluster
signs...
Cluster of traits.
Exactly. You know, then you need to be concerned and, you know, look further as far as what you're dealing with.
What do you think, and if I don't know if you can... Do you want to even say what your favorite or what you think maybe some of the better or more most informative courses that are available on the Love Fraud site? It is CLCE, correct? Continuing Education. That's the actual name of the catalog of courses.
Oh, we have a branch of our website, which is called Love Fraud Continuing Education, and it's totally accessible right from Love Fraud. And we offer two types of courses. We offer courses for survivors, and those are some of the courses that you've done, which have been popular. And we also offer courses for mental health professionals that offer continuing education credits for psychologists and social workers. So we have quite a few, and I mean, I've produced a few of them, and we've had other experts produce them. So,
fabulous content.
Oh, thank you so much. One of them that I like is why it's so hard to get over loving a sociopath and how you can recover, because that's one of the things that people struggle with is that, you know, that you get to the point where you recognize that you're involved with somebody who is disordered and you still can't escape. You know,
and that really just makes you feel insane.
Yes, yes. And so I explain all that. I explain, you know, how they hook you. And, you know, part of it is what I just talked about showering you with attention and then presenting themselves as your soulmate and, you know, and all the biology and psychology that goes along with that. So I talk
trauma
about
trauma bonding.
Yes, yeah, we talk about that in the program as well. And then, you know, what you can do to untangle yourself from the situation and recover. So, I mean, that's one of the ones that we have. We have, you know, you offered two courses related to legal issues dealing with disordered people. I also have one about dating again after the sociopath. We have one called the five-step exit, which helps people to figure out how to escape a sociopath. We have a couple.
Oh, that one sounds very interesting, and I should probably do that one.
Tonight. Well, yeah, you know, it's more for people who are currently involved in a relationship and trying to figure out how to get out of it. So it's very good information there. We have a couple of courses by Travis Vining, whose father was a serial killer.
Yeah, he's good.
Yes, he's wonderful. And so we
really
sweet
guy too.
Yes, he is. And we did a course on self-forgiveness. We did a course on the miracle and the madness. And so he talks about how to essentially a very low-key spiritual approach of how to get out of or recover from these experiences. And he's a wonderful presenter. You know, we've got lots of stuff, and we're coming up with more stuff all the time.
I think it's great, though, to have these courses and the wide variety of people that put them on, and it's not just professionals, it's not just mental health professionals. That's really cool. I think that there's such a variety, and there's some really interesting classes and content that, you know, people would never know about. For example, you know, there's a course, and I can't think of the presenter, but who speaks about the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Oh, yeah, Karen Huffer. That's a great program. And
yeah,
it's called Surviving Court When You're Traumatized.
Correct.
And she talks about the fact that the Americans with Disability Act might be a tool for someone who's suffering from anxiety, depression, or PTSD, and
right,
how you can take advantage of that law in order to level the playing field when you're in court with someone like this. So,
or
yeah,
even
that's
achieve
got
a little bit of an advantage with that.
Well, I don't know if it's an advantage, but at least the idea is to make it so that you can get through the court hearing. Because what happens if you're traumatized, if you're suffering from PTSD, your brain doesn't work. You know, when you're in the courtroom.
Yeah, it doesn't work as well, that's for sure.
Yeah, and this is just a straight-out physical symptom of PTSD, is that if you're in this room, you know, with the person who has traumatized you, and they're starting to ask questions, I mean, you can literally go blank. You can literally disassociate and not have the ability to answer questions. And the judge can be sitting there getting frustrated with you because you're not answering. And so there are accommodations that can be made if you do this in advance and arrange it in advance so that if necessary, you take a break, you get your thoughts together, and then you come back and you answer the questions. So that's
right. Absolutely.
Yes. And so it's a wonderful program that Karen offers, you know, to help people know how to do this.
And mine, I know I've been promising it for some time and it'll be out really soon. I do promise again, but I'm going to do a course that just focuses on mediation or arbitration when dealing with pathological, specifically in the context of a family law case. But it really, you know, is the same no matter what we're dealing with. It could be a contract dispute or a bankruptcy. But I've had a lot of success, to be honest with you, dealing with narcissistic personality disordered individuals with going to mediation. And because I always implement what's called a caucus, which just means the parties are in separate rooms. The mediator has to go back and forth between the rooms and the attorneys if there's attorneys present. It's just like we discussed, separating the parties eliminates that toxic dynamic, that overt bullying, and just it alleviates that emotional chaos and that pressure. And so that really significantly, that's going to really deflate and disempower the narcissist who plans to use bullying, even if they're just staring at their, spouse and just giving them the eye, or, just their energy is so palpable anyway. So going in separate rooms, just it's amazing what a difference that makes. And of course, that also shows the other side that you're taking control, that you're essentially placing, that very physical boundary in terms of alienating the parties in that respect. And so they don't like it. They feel automatically like they're on the defense, and that's a major weapon that now you've usurped from them. So I've actually had a great deal of success in my cases mediating them just by using that tool. So I'll talk about that more in my class and my online class to come.
It's terrific. That's a wonderful approach, and I'm sure it would be very helpful for people to understand that that's an option.
Right, because often they don't know. And, typically when you go into these mediations, at least in Florida, it's standard for there to be a form that everybody fills out in which they're asked some basic questions. Do you fear your partner? Are you being abused currently? And so people don't often realize, obviously, the impact of the psychological torture. And, if it's something that also they've become so accustomed to, they don't realize it. So I just have automatically implemented that. I don't even really give my clients an option, because they don't know the benefits of it until they're in the room with just me, and then they're so relaxed. And I've had to kind of train some of the mediators too, because at first, they kind of thought I was nuts when I would say certain things like, okay, well, we're going to go ahead and not believe anything that this person says unless they can back it up and substantiate it with documentation. So we're not going to take their word at face value. And some of the mediators, if they're not familiar with this pathology, they may just assume what they're saying is true. But I just let them know from the get-go, we're not playing that game. We're not going to believe anything, and we're not going to accept it, and nor are we going to entertain it as far as a negotiation, unless it's backed up. And so now it's kind of like, over time, now they know who I am and they trust me. At first they probably thought I was some, crazy lunatic, but now that they understand me, they understand that I'm very familiar with this phenomenon, which is so rampant. I mean, it's pretty much in every court case now, to some degree.
Yeah.
And it's like I said, it's not getting better. I see it as getting worse, and I'm seeing it manifest itself in the judges, the attorney staff. And I was actually telling a colleague today that it's interesting that I find that the more egregious the underlying allegations in a case are, if there's child abuse or something really sadistic or sinister going on, I find that every person that touches that case, there's just something off, and again, it kind of goes back to that malevolent energy is just contaminates anybody who comes near it, and I've had the craziest things happen, and I obviously don't have time to go into it now, but just crazy things that have happened with documents being lost, or, people that are just sort of on the sidelines in a case, or administrative staff, and just really weird snafus with the electronic filing system going down. And I mean, it literally, the entire system seems to be impaired by this voodoo energy. I don't know if you can speak to that at all, but.
Well, there is a big energetic component to all of this. And that's actually how I believe people get snared into these situations to begin with. And the way I explain it to folks is that what sociopaths do is they target vulnerabilities. And we all have vulnerabilities. If you're human, you have vulnerabilities. And what happens is that typically we have all had, you know, some kind of painful experiences in our past. You know, perhaps we had a difficult childhood, an abusive childhood, or prior relationships that were abusive, or perhaps we only have ideas about ourselves that are mistaken. You know, ideas like, I don't deserve to be loved, or people only like me because I help them, or, you know, something along those lines.
Right.
So what happens
is erroneous.
Yes. And so what happens is, you know, these can be very, very deep down inside us. And if we've had abusive or painful experiences in the past, especially if it happened when you're young, what happens is, you know, we, as a society, we are not taught to deal with our emotional issues. It's kind of like, you know, just pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and keep going. And so
be strong, hide your emotions.
Yes, yes, yes. And so all these...
Which is such a joke.
Really, all these betrayals and pain and grief and everything are all bottled up inside us. And that's what's creating the energy that the sociopaths latch onto. You know, they just have this radar for figuring out, you know, what your vulnerabilities are and being able to sense this energy that's inside. And so what happens is that that's how they latch on, you know, like, so for example, suppose somebody, you know, really, 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 really wants to get married. You know, it's a woman whose biological clock is ticking, which happened to me. And, you
right.
know, so they come along, they come along and they promise, you know, that, yeah, we're going to have a family, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And so my ex-husband just latched right into my vulnerability, you know, what that was. So, what happens is that, believe it or not, there can be a silver lining to the experience of having being involved with a sociopath. And the experience is that it is so awful that we can no longer keep a lid on all this pain and betrayal and everything else that have happened to us in the past. And it all just starts coming, pouring out, you know, when you're crying and when you're on the floor and when you're angry and everything like that. And that gives you the opportunity to release it all. So that is actually, you know, the value of the experience is that not
it
only...
It is so invaluable.
Yes, it's that... You know, because of the pain that you experience that's so overwhelming that you just have to cry, you have to let it out. And as you're doing this, it also gives you the opportunity to see how this particular pain of the most recent sociopath is connected to something in your past or mistaken beliefs or something deep within you. And it gives you the opportunity to process that as well. So when you do this, when you allow yourself to go through this process of getting all this out of your system, that's when you can truly heal, and that's when you can truly move on to the life that you really want.
Yep, I totally agree, because that's exactly what this type of experience does. It literally ruptures, you know, that core trauma, that core belief, which is, you know, usually one and the same, you know, traumatic belief that you have that's always something that's defective, that's erroneous, it's false, it's a lie, an illusion, that is just feeding, you know, this toxic emotional cycle and, you know, psychological propensity, and then the patterns, the self-sabotaging, the self-deprecating thoughts and lifestyle choices and everything else just sort of is fueled and fed from that core belief, that core trauma. And then once you realize that, you can make that connection and realize that there is that inextricable connection that you can't deny, then you can unravel it, and it really does allow for that shift that is necessary in order for you to ever have any sort of healing or real change in your life.
Absolutely. That's absolutely what happens. And I often tell that to people and offer it as a way to reframe what they're going through, because something good can come of it. And I mean, it's a bumpy ride, and you know, there's a lot of grief between here and there. But when you get to the other side,
it's very painful.
Very painful. I mean, it and traumatic, and it's just hard, and you just get tired of it after a while, because there's just so much that's coming out. But that's an indication of how much was bottled up, and
exactly
needed to come out. Yeah. So,
and I think people are just going to resonate in that sort of state until they've had enough. I mean, I know for me, I just had to feel it as long as I could until I just was done with feeling that. And then the sadness kind of transitioned to anger finally after many years. But it was a fabulous show. I'm so glad that I had you on, and we'll have to do it again perhaps next month. I really enjoyed this conversation. It was very compelling. And this is something that I think any human being with a beating heart and, you know, a couple of brain cells can really benefit from this conversation, and just hearing it, I think, could incite some sort of healing in somebody. So thank you so much for being part of this discussion, and for everything that you do for the world of survivors and trauma and everything else. I really sincerely appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Megan, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. It's been great.
Thanks, Donna. We'll catch you next time, okay?
Lovefraud.com.
And if you want to give your phone number too, that would be great.
Yeah, I do offer consultations. So the phone number is 609-945-1384, and that's in New Jersey. So it's 609-945-1384.
Thank you. We'll catch everybody next time. Have a great week.
You've been listening to People Like Us Radio with Megan Lyons, transcending the trauma of the human experience. Tune in live every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, where Megan enlightens other narcissistic abuse survivors to find true healing and inner peace through the beautiful art and practice of self-love. Megan knows it because she's lived it. The work on this show is powerful, life-changing, and provides a compelling purpose for survivors to be the light in the world. For more information about Megan Lyons, or to listen to past episodes of this show, visit EnterTheLightLLC.com.